welcome back to another episode of Friday Food Fight. My name is Wes Christian, your host for this week, and I am joined once again by Bart Christian, my co-host, and another very special guest. But instead of me doing the introduction, I want to turn it over to Bart and let him introduce our special guest this week, because it's a man that is very close to him. They've been friends for many years. And so, Bart, let's have you bring in our guest today.
Hey, Wes, it's great to be here. Thank you so much. And it's my great pleasure to bring in Mark Bordeaux. And many of you may not know, who don't know Mark Bordeaux, he's the Senior Director of Food Services for the Rheumatoid Thiogabosis, where he oversees child nutrition operations for 15 school districts. 15. He's also the current president of the New York School Nutrition Association. You know, one of the things that a lot of people don't know about Mark is that Mark has been a tireless worker in food banks across the across New York. And, you know, he's done a lot. I kind of share that with you, Mark, and that I'd work in my food bank here in Southern Arizona. But, you know, before we get into that, I think it's important to know that about Mark, that he has just got a trophy case full of honors. You know, he's been the National Director of the Year for SNA in 2017. He's won an award from the Food Bank of the Southern Tier in 2017, the Full Circle Award. And I'm going to get you to tell me a little bit more about that in a second, Mark. You've won multiple awards with the New York School Nutrition Association, and you also were a recipient of the FAME Award. And I think Mark, like I said, I imagine you had to build a wing on the house to put all the honors that you've gotten, because I think it's just impressive. And the thing I want to touch on first is that, you know, I go, a lot of things, something people don't know about me is that I go every Saturday and work at the food bank for a good bit of the day. And I've seen, you know, a microcosm of what this whole situation has done to our food banks. But you have obviously worked on a much larger level than I do in food banks across New York. So tell us about what you're seeing and tell us a little bit about, you know, what you've done and this, and tell us about the Full Circle Award.
Sure. Thank you for having me. I'm honored to be on the show. You guys are both tremendous people and doing great work, and I'm glad to be here today. So the Food Bank Southern Tier has been a passion of mine for, God, 15, 20 years now. Mm-hmm. My mentor, Ray Denniston, actually got me involved with the Food Bank Southern Tier. Great organization, works with 7 counties throughout the Southern Tier of New York State. And they're innovative. They're actually the Food Bank of the Year for at the national level in 2017 for all the great work they're doing. But the Full Circle Award was, I mean, probably one of my most honored awards. Again, it's just because I believe so much in what the Food Bank does. But the Full Circle Award was, overall with my work, not only with the Food Bank as far as being a board member, but being a voice in the community. I would go out to community partners throughout the community and talk about the food bank, advocate for its work. I would also donate quite a bit of money to the food bank because I believe in the organization so much. But as you talked about, Bart, is just being there and seeing the folks as you talk to them and hear about the needs that they have as you hand out the food. And the COVID-19 has just seen such a demand in the food bank that over the last 2 months, we've changed our model to where we're doing community food drives. And we're, just as you see on the TV, where you've seen mile-long, of cars, we've had the same thing. And to see the folks that come, and they're so passionate about the food bank, of what they do, and the food they're giving these folks right now, and their appreciation of the people who are getting the food. So many of the folks that we talk to that are coming to these food drives now are first-time people who have ever come to the food bank. Yep. And ask for food. So it shows the impact of what COVID-19 has had and how more important than ever the work of the food bank and food pantries are for the survival of our country right now.
You know, I was involved in a webinar that you were on with several other directors a couple of weeks ago for our SNA patrons. And you made a comment about the food banks and how you've actually partnered the food banks and the schools and providing food to people, obviously helping with the budget of the school district, and also at the same time helping to serve a greater number of people. Tell us a little bit about how that's worked.
Sure. We're able to, we're feeding between 7,000 and 8,000 kids and families each day. Where when the food bank does one of the community drives, they're only hitting about 500, 600 families, and it's in one central location. Where we're doing is we're within the whole county. We have 60 different sites where we're feeding kids. So we have a broader reach. And so the food bank has taken advantage of that. And we've been able to take advantage of two things. One is the USDA farm to family food boxes, which we're getting in every single week. We get about 2,000 to 3,000 boxes every week. And New York State has also had a program for food banks to take advantage of farm fresh products. So our food bank got about $1 million from New York State to buy farm products fresh to bring in to give out. And we've been able to take advantage of that, along with our dairy association, American Dairy Association Northeast, has been bringing us tractor trailloads of milk to give out to our families in need as well. And again, you know, we can reach 7,000 or 8,000 families in one day. With a food bank, you know, when they do these drives, they're only hitting 500 people or 500 families. So we have a bigger reach and we're able to have a stronger impact because of where we're at.
Well, you talk to a lot of directors around the country. Are you seeing that? I know that you and I both know that there are a ton of child nutrition directors that give a lot of time to local food banks, a whole lot.
Absolutely.
And but are you seeing that partnership growing more? I mean, I know you talk to a lot of people. Are you seeing that across the country, that partnership between food banks and schools growing?
Yes, I've seen a lot of districts doing this, especially with the USDA boxes. Many districts are able to take advantage of those boxes. Again, I think we are here for the same reason. We love what we do. We feel so important about what we do and want to make such a difference for our families that if the districts can do it, I'm talking to so many districts that are doing it and trying to do it as much as they can. So I'm not unique to that. And I think especially now we have to do it. I think we are such an important part of the community that I'm seeing so many folks step up and take that role very seriously.
All right. Well, Wes, that's the end of my intro. So
I'm sitting here quietly. I'm learning so much. I'm not involved with food bank. I feel like now I need to be. But I learned so many different things right there. I had no idea of the impact that you all have on a regular basis with these families. It's amazing.
Thank you.
That's great. Now, Bart mentioned in your introduction that you oversee multiple different school districts. 15, I believe, was the number that he said.
Yeah.
Obviously managing multiple districts, lots of staff can be challenging at times, I'm sure. Talk to us a little bit about how you communicate with your staff. Obviously we've got a lot of things going on right now with COVID-19. We've got a lot of civil rights topics that are being talked about. How do you communicate with your staff and get trainings and procedures and things out to these multiple different districts?
So, and you talked about challenges. It can be challenging, but yet so rewarding at the same time. It's both. We've had to reinvent ourselves as far as communication. Obviously, Zoom has been our biggest communication piece to get out to our teams. And Zoom has been a blessing at the same time because our districts are so, you know, such a big geographic area. From east to west, we're about 75 miles. And then from north to south, about 50 miles. So we have a huge area that we cover, and our training as far as for our leadership team, we would do one central training a couple times, probably five times a year. And it was difficult again because, you know, they're coming from so many remote areas. Well, Zoom has allowed us to do that more efficiently, you know, where people can stay in their office instead of traveling for an hour to us, and we can have those conversations. And so we've taken advantage of Zoom tremendously. We've been able to do a couple trainings in Zoom. One we just did a couple weeks ago was an emotional wellness training that we brought in an emotional wellness expert to talk about. It's okay to, you know, feel grieving and not understand what's going on, and try to understand what you're feeling, because you need to understand your feelings and deal with them first before you can help the rest of your team. So that was powerful that we could do that, and it's working. So our training mechanism has been Zoom, and I think it's a mechanism that we'll continue to use. Listen, we want to do face-to-face. That's still our number one preference, but Zoom can be something new in our toolbox that we can take advantage of once we go back to normal. You know, it could be a supplement in between things.
I've talked to many directors that have also been utilizing Zoom or a go-to meeting style type, meeting organizer. And, with any type of new technology, it poses some challenges, especially for some of the employees and staff that are less technical than others. Have you run into any issues with people just not being able to fit? I mean, Zoom's a pretty simple platform, but have you run into any issues with people not being able to successfully join meetings, and how have you overcome those?
Oh, yes. It was a challenge at first. It was just patience. Again, just if it wasn't Zoom, we would reach out to them and say, hey, here's the phone number. Just call in. You know, we would try to, you know, what we did at first is we had practice Zoom meetings for all of our kitchen team members. Of our site people. And so we did practice Zoom meetings individually so they would feel comfortable with it first before we had our actual first live meeting. And I think that calmed the nerves of many of our team, because a lot of them, as you said, weren't tech savvy. So I think by giving them a one-on-one attention first really helped them once we had our first team meeting together. And after that, we had very few challenges once we did our first initial training.
Now, you're in the Northeast area, which has been one of the hardest hit areas for the COVID-19 pandemic. What's a lesson that you've learned through this process of staying at home and dealing with these new directives?
A couple things we've learned. One is I got to give a shout out to my team first and foremost. I knew they're an amazing group of people, but it reiterates how amazing they are and how passionate they are for what they do. They'll work day and night. Some of my team members worked 14 days in a row to get started, to make sure that our team frontline workers felt comfortable, that we're doing the best we could for our customers. And I think we learned, again, I think we knew this, but the community learned how important we were to our kids and to our community. We really were becoming team leaders for the community. The community looked up to us. They reached out to us for guidance and support in any way we could. So that's something I learned, is that we are true leaders of the community, and we need to take that role seriously. And we need to, dive in and really, not just now, but in the future, once this is over, continue that leadership role for the betterment of our kids and for our community.
You and I have never doubted. We've always known for both of us, 20 plus years, that child nutrition staffs are heroes at what they do every day.
Absolutely.
And that, I've stood in front of groups and said, I've never seen so many do so much with so little, so fast. And that's it. And now the whole world knows that. And I think that's one of the great opportunities we have in child nutrition, is to keep blowing that trumpet that we've been somewhat reluctant to blow in the past.
Yes, it doesn't stop when COVID-19 stops. We got to keep on going, because there is so much that we can do and so much we should be doing. And you're right, there's heroes. I mean, you hear time and time that so many districts had to put this together in less than 48 hours, and they did it. And they did it successfully. So absolutely, I am proud to be part of this community of leaders that we have right now, and part of this profession. It really is a great profession.
Yeah, I know that you've seen a bunch of those tools that we put together with School Food Handler and sent those things out for the COVID. And, I got to say that I've gotten a lot of, compliments for that. But I have to say this. It wasn't me all by myself. I picked up the phone on a Saturday and called about a half a dozen directors that I know personally and said, what do you need? And we spent a few hours on the phone talking about procedures and things, and we quantified it, but it was not just us. It was like you said, it was a team effort across child nutrition, and nobody was reluctant to talk. It was great.
Yeah. And your tools, and I have notes on my desk, specifically the standard operating procedures that you developed early on. Those are going to be so instrumental in us opening up schools. So that was one of the first tools you gave out, which was fantastic. And we appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate all the help I got from all the folks. That's what I want to say. It was great. So thank you very much.
Yes.
Now, on top of the COVID-19 pandemic, and we can talk about that and have talked about that on previous shows, there's a lot of other things going on in the world right now. And specifically, the news coverage recently has been on a lot of the civil unrest. What's your team's response been to that particular item and the protests that are happening across the country?
I mean, obviously we're saddened, that it happened, but with anything, we have to look at opportunities and ways to improve. And that's what we're doing. We're doing a self-check, how have we done so far and what can we do to do a better job in the future? And during our self-check, and even me personally, on the front line and for our folks who are working daily at the schools, I think we've done a good job. Can we do a better job? Absolutely. But I think we've done a good job in the front lines. But doing a self-check, we can do a much better job with our leadership that we have. And that's going to be my focus over the next year or two is how can I do a better job of diversity in our leadership? And I'm right now currently in a leadership class in Cornell University called Lead New York. And in year two, this is perfect timing, but I have to do a community project. And in New York State, we have what we call civil service, where all of my leadership team, they have to take a test and finish top three in that test to be hired or considered for hire. And I think we need to do a better job of getting more diverse candidates on the civil service list so they are hireable. So that's going to be my focus for my research project and my project for my Lead in Your class is how do we do that? How do we get a more diverse group of people to sign up for civil service test, be able to pass it and get in the top three so we can hire a more diverse folks? Because those civil service lists are good for 5 years. So if you're on the list, you're on there for 5 years until that list is exhausted. So I might have the list from still 2017 that are still valid that we need to improve upon, and how do we do that? So we definitely need to do a better job with our leadership as far as being diverse. And I know that, and I'm up to the challenge to do that.
Now, what do you think that our responsibility is in both child nutrition and outside of child nutrition in our personal lives to really promote inclusion and meaningful conversations with our peers or coworkers or family around unconscious bias that exists?
Well, I think you talk about conversation. It's got to be a conversation. We can't have our heads in the sand anymore. We have to talk about it, be open about our mistakes, that what we've done, because you don't learn if you're not willing to admit your mistakes. You have to admit you made mistakes, and how do you grow from that, and how do we go forward and improve on to do a better job? Right now, I think, is no better time. SNA has a great incoming leader in Reggie Ross, which I believe Reggie was on your show a couple weeks ago. Reggie is such a tremendous leader. I've admired Reggie. I was on the board with Reggie a couple of years ago for SNA. And Reggie is so passionate about child nutrition and so passionate about what he does. And I think right now, Reggie can really lead a conversation nationally for all of us to say we need to do better. And we have to do that. First, we have to admit that we need to do better and then figure out how can we do better.
Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. It starts with listening. And it starts with listening to understand and empathetic listening, because, one of the things I think that so many times we do is, I have a good friend that I made a comment to that I said, we're kind of in this state of, I'm right and you're wrong and just shut up. And, yeah. and that's just not going to work. And we have to be willing to not only hear, not only listen, but hear, and then hear to understand. And that's the next step that I think so many people struggle with, is that willingness to sit and listen to something that's absolutely confrontation with what they believe, but yet try to understand why the other person actually believes that versus trying to put their views forth. And I think that's kind of where we are.
Yep. It's not going to be easy, but growing in true leadership is never easy, but we have to be willing to do it. And we have to be willing to power through all the controversy and all the white background noise that you're hearing in the background, all the negativity, and mm-hmm. saying, we can do this, we can do better, and we have to do better.
Mm-hmm. Bart, you mentioned the word empathy, and I think that it's fair to say that we all want a working environment that feels safe and where we can also freely express our goals and beliefs. Mark, how do you think we can accomplish this with our staff while still being empathetic to everyone?
I think, again, we've talked about this a couple times, is you have to be there. You have to, you know, be willing to listen, be vulnerable. I think you have to be vulnerable for your staff and just, I think, listen. You listen to them. You have to be honest with them. And, you know, the things you can solve quickly and be able to solve quickly, you do that. And the things that are going to take time, you develop a plan and let them know, hey, I hear you. We're going to do the best we can to develop something that will make your job easier, to make it safer. But I think it's just being empathetic, as we talked about a couple times, being empathetic, listening, be available, and be willing to say, I don't have all the answers right now, but I'm going to do the best I can to get the answers that will be right by you.
Now, to kind of change gears, you obviously manage a lot of districts, as we've mentioned in the past, in the first part of the show. With those districts, a lot of directors, and I'm sure yourself and your team are doing this as well, are looking at bringing new people on for this upcoming school year. And I would imagine with 15 different districts, you're most likely going to be bringing a lot of people on. Yes. How are you planning on approaching and handling staffing for hiring in this upcoming school year for the present role, but while planning for the, I guess, kind of unknown of what the fall might bring?
That's a great question, especially we don't know what the fall. Here in New York State, we don't even know if we're opening up in the fall yet or not. You know, there's a lot of conversations going on, but nothing definite if we are opening or not. I think it's an opportunity for us to recruit. You know, I think it's an opportunity for us to grow as an organization. And we've always in the past, I think, waited for people to come to us. You know, we've just waited for the application. We'd call personnel office, say, you have any applications for us? Yes or no. And if we didn't get them, okay. I think we need to do a better job of going out and looking for staff members. You know, if you're in a restaurant and you see somebody giving you good customer service, try to recruit them, saying, hey, have you ever thought about school food service? And have this conversation about what school food service is and how it could be a great career. That's something I think we could do a better job at. And I think that's probably going to be something I can do, you know, even in COVID-19, if I'm going out, you know, in a small setting or something, if I see somebody that I see as potential that could work in our environment and be a success, I'm going to do a better job of recruiting when I'm out, even going grocery shopping. If I see somebody that's potential, is just toot our own horn and being visible and trying to recruit instead of waiting people to come to us, I'm going to go and try to find some great people to work for us.
You know, one of the best people I ever hired in the last 25 years was somebody I hired back in Georgia, and she was driving a beverage cart on the golf course. And she was so pleasant and so nice, and one of the just generally, you know, just a generally nice person. And I pursued her, actually called her a couple of times, got her to come for an interview. And she's now the Southeastern Regional Manager for SFS PAC, you know, and she got her start with us. And it was just you never know. Yeah. You got to kind of go with that gut. But I got one kind of follow-up question to what you said. Is this as we see unemployment benefits, these extended benefits or enhanced benefits begin to dwindle out, and at the end of June, you know, and we're going to see more people coming back into the workforce, I believe, as things open up. Do you see that as an opportunity for child nutrition? Because there's going to be some restaurant people that have that experience level, but their restaurants are not going to be there anymore. Their jobs are not going to be there anymore because of what's happened, or at least not there immediately because of the reduced serving numbers. Do you think that's some way that child nutrition or school nutrition in general should try to recruit those people? And how would you do that?
Absolutely. I think there's a couple ways you could do it. First, you could do, you know, you can go to the unemployment office and let them know that you're hiring. You could promote job fairs, even if it's online. You could do an online job fair. Mm-hmm. Say, hey, you know, we're doing open recruiting. We'd love to meet you. You know, here's a link. You know, sign on. You know, give them all time to sign on. there's different things you can do, I believe, to do that, especially since you can't have in-person job fairs, or if you can, do an in-person job fair. But again, I don't think we should, at the time of waiting for the applications to come to you is over. You need to get out there and find folks to hire. You know, I think going to the unemployment office or recruitment office in your local city or county and let them know that you're hiring, and give them your contact information is a good start, though, probably.
Sure. Now, have you put a plan together or have something in mind for recruiting specifically to really support diversity and you know, these new folks that you're going to go and be seeking out?
Yep. We actually had yesterday was our first our diversity. We had a diversity training yesterday for an hour and a half to talk about that a little bit as far as going out and recruiting and talk about ways to go out and recruit folks. Our personnel director at BOCES was there and actually did some of the training. And he's done an excellent job of helping us, guide us through recruiting. And some of the tips I've talked about is what he recommended, is just going out, being visible to the community and talking about what a great place schools are, school food services to work. Mm-hmm. But you have to go out there and you have to tote what you do. It's changed. You have to. You just have to be that voice.
Now, you mentioned some diversity training. Have you found good civil rights diversity training to really address the current climate that you would recommend to folks? I've heard from several directors that they're having a hard time finding resources to use.
I agree. It is a challenge. I know it in January in California, SNA had a great diversity speaker, but he still didn't talk about even to the next level what's going on right now. I think it's a challenge to find great speakers. I'm sure they're out there and they're probably really, really busy. But yeah, I've not been able to find a great one either that really can dive in and ask those tough questions and push you to the next level.
Now, as far as training is concerned, with the startup of school, and you mentioned earlier that you're not even really sure if you're going to have a startup of school when it's, you know, supposed to happen. But yep. We've obviously got to continue to plan as though we will open up on time. Right. How have your plans changed in terms of bringing staff back, training to start this upcoming year off with COVID-19 and all the civil rights challenges?
So a couple things we're doing is one is we can have small, you know, we're in our area, we're in phase four of opening up for New York State. So we can have small gatherings. So we have usually have a large serve safe training every summer. We'll do more frequent ones with less people. So we'll offer more serve safe trainings. We are starting to develop for our leadership team, Zoom meetings right now. So we'll have a couple days of Zoom meetings in August with our team leadership. And, you know, we'll develop those. And then we're also developing with your program in ICN, you know, we are developing trainings for our staff when they come back that they can do at home or at the school. But your program, Food Handler, is fantastic. And we're really more than ever is going to be a major part of our training program for the fall. It's going to be tremendous. That's if we didn't have your program, it would be a bigger challenge for us. So we're lucky that we're part of your family, and we're definitely going to use your program a lot for our frontline staff.
Oh, wonderful! I'm very happy to hear you say that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, mentioning going back this upcoming year and kind of getting your office staff back together, what's one kind of office tradition that you're most looking forward to getting back to?
Probably simple, but just being able to walk in and have everybody there, you know, just walk in and having the people you know, for the last 10 years, you spent more time with them mm-hmm. than you have with your own family. You know, I miss that. I miss seeing, you know, Rosa, who's in my office every day, who's been with me for 16 years, talking to her and seeing how her family is doing and talking with everybody else. It's probably simple, you know, probably the simplest, but probably one of the joyous things I have is just seeing them on a daily basis and communicating with them. Simple, but that's probably my biggest thing I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, Well, I know Bart's been going out to a lot of restaurants here recently, and with things kind of opening back up, and you guys and stage four, you said, of kind of a reopening, what's a restaurant that you're really excited to go back to, or if you have gone out recently, what'd you order?
We've been still doing a lot of takeouts.
Okay.
One restaurant that just opened up last week, we opened back up, is one of our favorites, and it's called the Taco Garage.
All right.
It's just a small little restaurant, and literally it has a garage door that opens up and has a beautiful patio. We love to go there. It's a great atmosphere, right in downtown Binghamton, and the food is fantastic. My favorite there is steak tacos. It's actually made with filet mignon tips. It's just fantastic. And you side that with their homemade margaritas. They actually make a homemade mix for the margaritas. Just, yeah, can't wait to get back there.
Oh, you're making me hungry right now, Mark.
Real.
Well, Mark, in kind of closing today, is there anything that you would like to kind of close our viewers out with, or any maybe piece of advice for new directors or staff coming into the upcoming school year?
Sure. If you're a new director, you're coming in at trying times, of course, but there's no better career than being in child nutrition. You will meet some amazing people. There's great leaders out there, and they're all willing to help and support you. We have a great family here. We feed off each other. There's I have no problem calling directors throughout the country and asking for advice, and they give me honest advice, which I appreciate. And just stay strong. And anybody, even if you're a new director or a seasoned director, is be strong and know that you might not have all the answers, which might be new territory for you, but that's okay. Accept that, do the best you can, and be honest with yourself and be honest with your staff, and together we'll get through this. I see our strongest days are still ahead, even though we're in tough times now. But be strong and know that you're not alone in this. And we're here as a family, and we'll get through this as a family together.
That's very well said.
I truly think we're poised to be elevated in the community and in the country in child nutrition to a level like we've never seen before, if we will just simply grasp hold of it and keep at it, because it's going to be a trying time, but it is a time of great opportunity if we don't miss it.
Yep, you're exactly right. What do they say that the it's always darkest before the dawn, and I see a beautiful dawn ahead of us that is going to be fantastic, and our industry is going to be stronger than ever in a couple of years. I believe that.
Me too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for being on the show. Mark, it's been just a pleasure to have you on and to
Yeah,
talk
thank
with you
you.
for a little bit.
My
And
honor.
Bart, always good to see you as well. We will definitely have to have you back on very, very soon.
Absolutely.
So,
Thanks,
all
everybody.
right. Well,
Have a great day and have a great upcoming July 4th.
sounds
absolutely.
wonderful. God
Thank
bless, Mark. Thanks so much.
you. God bless everybody. Take care.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been another episode of Friday Food Fight. My name is Wes Christian, and we look forward to seeing you again next Friday at 12 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. Take care, everyone.